Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I believe in God. I believe God created humanity, and I believe there are evolutionary forces at work in nature, and I don't think they're mutually exclusive. So evolution will remain part of the schools and the education curriculum.
The main thing that I've learned is just to know your audience. Don't say stuff in front of people that don't appreciate it.
So that would be a legislator stepping up from any district, could be hundreds of miles away, to claim that our election law is illegal. So we will fight that because, you know, we are a charter city. We're one of 19 charter cities. We feel like we have legal precedent on our side. We have the vote and the will of the people on our side.
And joining us to talk about who made the ballot and what they're saying about their candidacies and an early controversy in the GOP gubernatorial primary, among other things, is Jaime Molares, former state school superintendent, now with the firm Molera Alvarez. Jaime, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here again.
So let's start with former Secretary of State, former State Senate President Ken Bennett, who tweeted yesterday that he would not appoint Cindy McCain to replace her husband, Senator John McCain, if he is governor. This was met with lots of criticism, especially from Governor Ducey and his office. What's Bennett doing here?
Well, I think the good news is that I'm not sure he's going to have a chance to fulfill his promise of of not appointing her because he's not going to be governor. But I think it's just somebody who's has to throw a Hail Marys in order to be have some kind of a chance in the primary against an incumbent, fairly popular within the Republican ranks, Republican governor. And so I think Ken's just trying to play to that hard right base and see if he can get some traction.
Well, he followed it up by talking about how he disagreed with John McCain's vote on the repeal of the Affordable Care Act and how, Cindy would just basically continue that tradition. You see this as basically an appeal to the hard right as a way to maybe run at the current governor, Governor Ducey, from his right.
Right. And so he came out when he announced as governor, he came out basically saying that Governor Ducey is soft on Republican issues and that he's the true conservative in the race. You know, I'm not sure if that's going to take hold. But at the same time, if you're going to run in a primary, usually the Democrats that are liberals win the Democrat primary, the conservatives win the Republican primaries. And that's where he's trying to get to is the right.
Yeah, I mean, so this is the guy, right, who back in 2012, like, went through the whole, we have to verify Obama's birth certificate to let him on the ballot. Is this all about headlines?
Oh, it's absolutely about headlines, because think about it. This is somebody that doesn't have a lot of money in his race, is very doubtful he's going to get a lot of money, but yet we're talking about it now in the media, and there's stories about it. So I think this is one way you can start to get your name out there.
Do you think this will work in any way? Do you think
No.
this gets any far-right Republicans to vote for Bennett as opposed to Ducey?
You know, that's always possible. So, but whether or not he can generate the 51% that could come over and vote against Governor Ducey, I think is very doubtful. But it might be appealing to a very small part of the GOP.
Well, and he came out initially and announced his candidacy like amidst this Red for Ed thing, right? So he's attempting to go after the governor on education as well. What's his tact there? What's the idea?
Well, I think from what I've seen and heard, his mantra is about fiscal accountability and fiscal stability. And I think he's going to try and say that this was not sustainable, which is interesting because, you know, you're hearing that from the left.
Yeah.
But now you're hearing him from the right. So I think that's his. There's very few plays that he has, if you think about it from just the raw political terms. So I could see him trying to do things like this. That hopefully, like I said, you know, they're Hail Marys. Come August, he's hoping that one of them will catch fire and that he could hit and hurt Ducey.
So do you expect to see more things like this between now and the end of August?
Well, if he's willing to go, which I consider to be a fairly ugly tweet and these kinds of statements, if he's willing to do it now, then yes, absolutely. I could see him doing other kinds of things.
All right. So let's talk about some of the other primaries. You mentioned Bennett and Governor Ducey. This week, of course, was the deadline for candidates to file their petition signatures to get on the ballot for the August primaries. And Jaime, one of the names that we keep having to talk about running for the state Senate again is former state representative Don Shooter. He, of course, was expelled from the House earlier this year after an investigation into a pattern of sexual misconduct. Do you give him any chance in a GOP primary in that district for the Senate?
Well, I just want to meet some of the 900 people that signed his signature petitions. I find that fascinating. I would never count anybody out in a primary setting because I think he's also going to come expect him to run a very hard right and appeal to the far right, saying that this was politically motivated, you know, in a very Trump-esque type of a fashion. He's going to say it was all fake news. It was all contrived and the liberals took me out. So he's going to play up that mantra. Now, whether or not at the end of the day, folks buy it, it's to be seen, but I give him some chance.
So I want to bring up something here. So he said, I think to Howie Fisher of Capital Media Services, after he asked him, what did you learn from all of this after this, you know, dramatic show on the House floor where they voted him out and it was speech after speech after speech. And he said, the main thing I've learned is just to know your audience. Don't say stuff in front of people that don't appreciate it. So there's a lot to be said about the sexual harassment and sexual misconduct there that he's just basically saying, I don't really care. It's frustrating, right?
Well, again, I think he's going to say that this was all, you know, built up and this wasn't real. There wasn't
deny
any, just deny it, but there's also not a lot of substance to these accusations. Again, whether or not the voters of his district will say, you know what, I'm sorry, but, you know, we got to move past that. We need leaders that are going to really, you know, show themselves to comport with what they believe in. But if they want somebody that's going to be that hard right and unafraid to say vitriol, then they're going to vote for him.
Do you think this in any way presents a headache for the GOP going
Absolutely.
Into August?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good thing for the GOP because when you have folks of really high controversy, you know, it's never good for the brand. And I think that they would love to try and stick with those individuals that they believe could be the more of the, you know, Governor Ducey. I mean, him on top of the ticket, if they have a Martha McSally running for the U.S. Senate. I mean, it's a strong brand that they can rally around. Mm. But then when they get sidetracked by these types of stories, it never helps.
At the risk of asking you to think like a Democrat for a minute, do you think that the Democrats can and should try to use Schuter's candidacy? I mean, he's in a crowded primary, so it's not like he is at the top of the ticket, to your point about Governor Ducey. But is this the kind of thing where, you know, Democrats could say, hey, Republicans of the party of Don Schuter, look, he's running again. They might nominate him again.
Yeah, of course, I think the Democrat Party were going to use any type of story or any type of political nuance that they're going to help make their case. So certainly I would expect them to use this as political fodder against the GOP, regardless of what district it might be.
It's the same story, right, with Ken Bennett, right? Like this is like somebody breaking into a major like race and trying to kind of distract from the messaging that the Republican Party is trying to send. Is that kind of what happens in a state where it's mostly going to be Republicans who win these offices anyway?
Well, one of the things that I think the GOP is a little bit concerned about is that we know just from the polling and what we've seen nationally, there is going to be likely a blue wave. Now, whether that blue wave turns into a blue tsunami is the question. And so the things that we want to do in Arizona, or the Republican Party wants to do, is to minimize those types of things that take away from their message. And again, when you're fighting people that are saying outlandish things and that really hurt the brand come November, they're trying to minimize that. And they're trying to stick with those known leaders that they think that they can point to and say, well, this is what the Republican Party stands for, and these are the kinds of folks that we want showcasing what we're offering.
Another candidate running to try to get back into the legislature is former House Speaker David Gowan.
Right.
He ran for Congress unsuccessfully in the last go-round, had some run-ins with a Capital Times reporter and over some investigations into spending and you know, financial disclosures, things like that. How strong is his brand in that Southern Arizona district, and how much of a shot do you give him to make it back?
Well, I think it'll be a race. I think he definitely is known. He has good name ID since he was a legislator there for many, many years. But the thing that he's going to face in a candidate, Drew John, who's also a strong conservative, who's very, very well-liked, very affable individual, who's also a county supervisor down there, too. But the difference is that Drew John, you'll see him get quite a bit of, I think, business community support. He's shown to be a very strong pro-business type candidate, and I would suspect that he's going to be able to raise quite a bit of money. So it'll be a race, but I think Drew John has some good attributes that would make him a tough candidate.
That's Jaime Molera, former state school superintendent with the firm Molera Alvarez. I'm Mark Brody with Lauren Gilger. You're listening to the Friday Newscap here on the show. More just ahead. Good morning. It's the show here on KJZZ 91.5 with Lauren Gilger. I'm Mark Brody. You're listening to the Friday Newscap, joined in studio by Jaime Molera and on the phone by longtime pollster and host of The Think Tank, Mike O'Neill. Mike, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
So, Mike, we've been talking a little bit about some of the candidates who've made the primary ballot. Is there anything, when you look at those who are running and those who are, you know, in contested races, any particular races stand out to you as ones that we should be paying attention to?
Well, I've looked at District 28 as a really interesting one.
Sort of a Central Phoenix area.
Yes, Central Phoenix, Paradise Valley. The most interesting development, there's apparently some internecine warfare going on because the Kate Brophy McGee is the incumbent Republican, and the husband of one of the representatives in that district filed as an independent in that district, which would seem to be most likely to throw the district to the Democrat. So one suspects there's some bad blood there.
Jaime, do you think that's a race that the Democrat could win in the Senate race?
No, he's absolutely right. I mean, that could be a game changer as far as turning over the Senate to the Democrats. Mark Sims is the gentleman who's the husband of Maria Sims, representative. And there has been a lot of bad blood within that party apparatus. And so I think there's a lot of Republicans that are not happy with the Sims family right now because they think there's a chance that there might be a turnover.
And that's one of those districts, Mike, that is considered competitive. It has one Democrat and one Republican in the House. Do you agree with Jaime that could really make a big difference in terms of who controls the Senate next year?
I absolutely do. It's borderline competitive. I think Kelly Butler won that. By the way, there are 27 districts where there are more than which lean one party or the other by 5% or more. Those districts elect a total of 81 representatives and senators. 80 of those are from the party that is the plurality party in that district. The sole exception is Kelly Butler in that district. Mm-hmm. It is there are in that district 7.9% more Republicans than Democrats. So while it's on the borderline and Kelly Butler showed that a Democrat can win there, the default assumption in that district would be Republican.
Jaime and Mike, let's move on to another a trial that started this week in the Corporation Commission, in which former Commissioner Gary Pierce, his wife, a lobbyist, and the owner of a water utility are accused of bribery. Mike, we've been hearing some interesting arguments and opening statements and some comments coming out of that trial. How much do you think that we are going to get sort of a behind-the-scenes look at how the Corporation Commission works based on what goes on in this trial?
Well, in court, things tend to come out that are otherwise unavailable. You get access through subpoena to various documents, internal memos, and things that normally don't see the light of day. So I think the public's going to learn quite a bit.
Jaime, is this going to be a look at how the sausage gets made at the CorpCom?
Well, I know there's a lot of organizations and interest groups that are pouring through all the court materials in order to get at that very issue. Mm-hmm. But whether or not there's a smoking gun, it'll be interesting to see.
One thing I always wonder with this is, though, so I remember when the Susan Bittersmith thing was happening. She was the head of the Corporation Commission and stepped down over conflict of interest a few years ago. I remember there was a poll that came out that basically said that, surprise, surprise, people actually know what the Corporation Commission is because there had been so much controversy around it. And before that, I don't know how many people really were aware. What do you think the public perception could change? How do you think the public perception could change because of something like this?
Well, in good times, that's a pretty invisible level of government. Yeah. I do remember in the 80s, it got very prominent because there were some very large rate increases. Mm-hmm. And the net result of that is the Democrats actually took control of the Corporation Commission for a while because it was Republicans who voted those rate increases. But in good times, in the absence of big rate increases, I think it fades into obscurity.
I think that's true. And one of the things that I talked about earlier is the Republican brand. I mean, this is one of those other stories that really highlights, you know, what the Democrats are going to be attacking the Republicans on. So they just need to figure out, I think, sitting corporation commissioners need to figure out how they can present themselves in a better light.
So, Jaime, do you think that whatever happens in this trial, does that affect November's election for the open seats on the corporation commission?
Well, like I said, the folks, the Democrats that are running are certainly going to use this. They're going to use this as, see, this is the culture of the commission, whether it's true or not. They're going to be using that as political fodder. The Republicans that are running, the incumbents that are running, just need to try and distance themselves and they, as much as possible, talk about what they're trying to do and get away from this particular court case.
Mike, do you think this becomes a campaign issue? And if so, is it a successful one?
I think Democrats obviously do try to make it an issue. It's been a Republican-dominated body for about 20 years now. And they can say, look how it's run. But they've got to make the case because they're not running against the person who's on trial. So that's a tough case to make.
All right, guys, let's move on to something that we really just learned about yesterday, which is that the House Ethics Committee is looking into some issues in the office of Arizona Congressman David Schweikert. This deals with some financial issues and whether or not his chief of staff maybe was making more money than he was allowed to at a second job. Mike, how significant is this, especially given that we don't have a whole lot of details about what actually they're looking into and what's been going on here?
I think that you've captured it. It's a question of how much there is there, and it's way too early to say. Is this tip of the iceberg? Could this be something that resonates? We simply don't have enough information to know. But when you say ethics investigation for anybody running for office, clearly that's not a good thing. Remember a few years ago we had the check-cutting scandal, and cost Jay Rhodes a seat in Congress, a very safe Republican seat. So it can hurt, but way too early to say.
Jaime, what do you think?
Well, and I think also it goes back to, we keep going back to this, just the branding of the GOP. These are the kinds of stories that you just do not want to have happen right now, particularly when they know there's going to be a strong Democrat showing in November. The last thing they want to do is turn off their own base and also motivate the opposite side. And these are the kinds of things that give credence to that.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Jaime, because I think a lot of times people think about in terms of who shows up to vote as, you know, you want to get this base encouraged. But I think to your point, whether or not the other side of the base is also encouraged or even bothers to show up, because, right. You know, for example, in this case, Democrats could have the same turnout they've always had. But if Republicans don't show up, that could pose a problem for Republicans.
Well, what's heartening for Republicans in that off presidential election years, which this is, you know, for a long, long time, going back, you know, several decades, the Republicans have always come out in much higher numbers than the Democrats. The question is, if the Democrats can increase their base to come out this time around, and there's a lot of motivation because of the national and the Trump factor, of course. But also, if the Republicans don't come out, if a lot of people are just mad about what's going on nationally, or these types of stories are like Chinese water torture, that just they're saying, I'm done with it, I've had enough, so I'm not going to come out and vote. Those are the kinds of things they have to worry about, and the Republicans need to get on message. But I think they're protected a little bit in that if they do have strong candidates in a Governor Ducey and a Martha McSally, that helps out a little bit.
Let's talk a little bit in the...
Could I comment on that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead,
Mike. There's two reasons to believe that may not be the case. You're absolutely right. Republicans traditionally come out better in off-year elections. Number one, the Democratic base, by every off-cycle election we've had so far, is clearly energized. Number two, education correlates very highly with voting. Up until 2016, more educated voters on average tended to vote Republican. The reverse was true in 2016. If that holds, it suggests that what accurately described as a long-term Republican trend to vote better in off-year elections, that may no longer hold.
Mike, your comment about education segues nicely into the last segment we have a little bit of time for. We're still talking about whether or not evolution should be taught in schools in Arizona, in public schools in Arizona, and if so, in what way and how much. I mean, you held the job that Diane Douglas now holds, and she's talking about changing the way evolution is taught. What do you think about all this?
Well, I think it's sad. As not on any kind of a party level, but as a former superintendent and somebody that believes strongly in the value of education, to minimize that for political purposes, and which I think that's what's happening here, is absolutely ridiculous. The theory of evolution is something that we understand or should understand and something that should be taught to our students. And I just think by politicizing it in order to try and appeal to a segment of any political party's base is just something that we should get away from.
Mike, is this more of a political issue or an education issue, do you think?
I think it's more of a laughingstock issue. It's the kind of thing that can subject to public ridicule to this state, make us look very bad. We need to remember the word theory, when scientists adopt very modest use of language, when scientists says theory, the rough everyday equivalent of that is about as close to establish a fact as there is. Their language is a little misleading in terms of the way people normally understand words. A theory is not just a notion. A theory is as good as it gets.
And this is sort of another infight, for lack of a better phrase, in the Republican Party here, because Governor Ducey came out and said something pretty nuanced about how, you know, you don't have to not believe in evolution in order to be a religious person. Jaime, do you think this is another sort of distraction from that brand?
It absolutely is. And I think, but, you know, the superintendent has been a big distraction for the Republican brand for many, many years. And unfortunately, we have to go through this. But I think at the end of the day, the State Board of Education that ultimately oversees statewide policy, I think they're going to be able to, you know, come out with the right decision.
All right. Well, unfortunately, have to leave it there. That's Jaime Molera, former state school superintendent, now with the firm Molera Alvarez, also joined by longtime pollster and host of the think tank, Mike O'Neill. Guys, good conversation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And more to come on the show.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.